Okay, today's daf is bracha, daf chaf gimel. We're at the bottom of chaf bet, amid bet, at the Mishnah. If someone is davening, he remembers that he's a bal keri, he shouldn't stop his davening, he just shortens each bracha, only says the bracha part. If someone's doing tevila, he's going to the mikvah, if he can get up and cover himself, if he get out of the mikvah and cover himself before netzachama, and then say all of kriyat shema before netz, he should do so. Saying kriyat shema before netz is a minhag of vatikin. And if not, then he should cover himself with the water and read and say kriyat shema in the mikvah. And you shouldn't cover yourself with foul water or water that was used to soak flax until you fix it by pouring more water into it to purify it a little bit. And how far must you distance yourself from foul water to say kriyat shema, or alternatively, how far must you distance yourself from urine to say kriyat shema? 4 amot. Gemara. Right. So we said that you don't stop in the middle of davening, rather you just shorten each bracha if you remember that you're a bal keri. And if you're reading the Torah and you remember you're a bal keri, you don't stop. Rather, you just read it very quickly. Rameir says, no, a Balkari is not allowed to just read through them very quickly. He is only allowed to read no more than 3 psukim. Tanya Ida, and another bright, if you're about to daven and you realize there's excrement in front of you, you're supposed to distance yourself. You walk before it, dalad amot. Vatanya, let's study. But didn't we teach that you're supposed to walk to the side of it? Sometimes you can walk in front of it, but sometimes you can't walk in front of it. Maybe there's a wall right in front of you. So that's when you go to the side. If you davened already, then you realize there's excrement in front of you. Even though what you did was wrong, it still counts as tefillah. You don't have to repeat it. So Rava challenged him. But didn't we teach that the sacrifice of a rasha, of a wicked person, and we're not talking about an entirely wicked person, rather perhaps someone who inappropriately makes a sacrifice, is a to'eva. It's considered an abomination to a Kaddish Baruch Hu to bring a sacrifice in an inappropriate fashion. So we see from here that because he sinned by davening in front of excrement, even though he did daven, this tefillah was an abomination and you'd need to repeat his davening. Right? So someone is davening and he starts urinating on himself. Posek. He has to stop immediately until he stops urinating. And then he can return to davening. But where does he return to? One says that he's supposed to go back to the beginning of davening, and the other says, no, he just has to go back to the place that he stopped. Perhaps we can suggest that their argument is about the following matter. Perhaps they're arguing about the following point. If one stops in the middle of davening, the amount of time that it would have taken them to complete davening, one says that you have to, at that point, go back to the beginning of davening, one says, no, even if you stopped the amount of time it would have taken to complete the davening, you can still just continue from where you are. Right? But then that can't be what they're discussing, because then they would have had to make a differentiation between how long you stopped for, right? Because they don't address the length of time that you stopped for, it's unlikely that they're debating the specific case of when you stop for enough time to finish. If that was the case, they would say, okay, if the case were that you stopped with enough time to finish, this would be the halacha, machloket. And if it were the case that you stopped without enough time to finish, the following would be the halacha. But because they didn't address those two cases, it's unlikely that that was the topic of the Marchloklet. Ella, rather, the Kulei Alma, Imsha, Kedei Ligmor, Et Kula, Chozel Rosh. Everyone is in agreement that if you waited enough time to finish all of davening, you're supposed to go back to the beginning of davening. That's not a Machloket. Vehadam, or rather Vehacha, meaning in our case, what's the Machloket? Bedilosha, Kamifligi, they only debate a case where you did not wait enough time to finish the Tzvila entirely. Demar Savar Gavar Dechuyehu, Ve'en Roi. Ve'en tefilat ha'tefila, umar savar gav dechaziyahu v'tefilat ha'tefila. And one holds, because you had to go to the bathroom the entire time you were davening, you were a person who was not fit to daven, and therefore your tefila does not constitute a proper tefila, and you have to repeat it. You weren't allowed to daven then. You had to go to the bathroom. And the other says, no, even though you shouldn't have done so, you were still technically fit to daven, and therefore your tefila counts. Tano ben ha'nitzach ha'nekev ha'ayit palel. Right? If you have to go to the bathroom, you can't daven. V'imit palel tefilat ha'to'eva. And if you daven, your tefila is an abomination. It doesn't even count. Amar v'zvivi, demar of Yehuda, lo shanu el ha'shen yachola ha'shol be'atzma. Right? And there is an addendum to this idea that we only taught this idea if you were not able to hold yourself, but if you were able to hold it in for a significant period of time, then your tefillah counts, because it's not if you have to go to the bathroom to any degree whatsoever. If you really have to go to the bathroom, but here, if it's not so dachuf, you don't have to go to the bathroom that badly, then it still counts. Okay, well, what does that mean? How badly is really badly? How long do you have to be able to hold it in for in order for it to constitute a proper tefillah? I'm Rav Shishit ad parsa. The amount of time it would take to walk a parsa, about 72 minutes. Right, there are some who taught the addendum that we made, the distinction between whether you can hold it or not, actually as a part of the Mishnah itself and not an addendum afterward. So it was taught in the Mishnah itself. What were we talking about when we said that your tefillah is a toev and it doesn't count? Only when you're not able to hold it. But if you were able to hold it, then your davening counts. Ad kama, and how much is considered you're able to hold it? Amar zerav zvid ad parsa. The amount of time it takes to walk a parsa, about 72 minutes. Amar Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonatan, and Yitzchak leNekevav. Harei ze lo yitpala. Anyone who needs to go to the bathroom is not allowed to daven. Mishum shenemar, as it says, Hakon lekrad lokecha Yisrael. You have to prepare yourself to daven, right? So you have to not be distracted. And clearly, if you have to go to the bathroom very badly to the point that you can't hold it for a significant period of time, you're too distracted and you're not properly prepared to speak with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Amar Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonatan, and Manda Amar Shmur aglecha kasher telech el beit alokim, or Maida. Amar Shmor Raglecha Kasher Telech LeBeit Elokim Shmor Atzmecha Shelo Tichta V'im Tichta Havei Korban, meaning that which is written, guard your legs when you go to the house of Kadosh Baruch Hu. That means protect yourself, don't do an Avera, and if you do an Avera, okay, well then bring a Korban. Okay, continuation of the Pasuk. What does it mean V'karov Lishmoa Divrei Chachamim? Rava interprets the pasuk. You should listen to the chachamim who say that if you do anything wrong, you have to bring a korban. You should listen to them when they advise you to bring a korban. And doing tshuva is better than the fools bringing a zevach, a korban. What does that mean? So we continue, Rava continues to interpret the pasuk as follows. Don't be like those fools who do a sin and they bring a korban and they don't do tshuva. They think that just by, slaughtering an animal, they're good and they don't have an internal process of repentance. Those are the fools. Don't be like them. And what does it mean at the end of the pasuk that they don't know how to do bad? Right? Anyone who doesn't know how to do anything bad is a tzaddik. Why are you calling the fools who don't know, who aren't doing tshuva, they're just bringing korbanot, people who don't know how to do bad? That means they're tzaddikim. No, rather, what does it mean about them? Don't be like the fools who bring a korban and they don't even know what they're bringing it for. I don't know, the rabbis told me to bring a korban. Maybe it's korban toda. Maybe I did something great. Maybe I should be saying thank you to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Maybe it's korban chatar because I did something wrong. I don't know, because I don't know wrong from right. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu bein tov l'ra einan mavchinim. They don't distinguish between good and bad. V'hem v'im korban levanai. They can't even distinguish between good and bad, and they think that their korban is going to do something. At that point, it's just a thoughtless process. It doesn't make any sense. Don't be like them. You have to be able to distinguish between good and bad and know when you did something wrong and bring a korban for it, but not just bring a korban because it's ceremonious and then do real tshuva. Rav Ashi, Rav Tema, Rav Chanina, Bar Papa, Amar Shmur Nekavecha, B'shash Taomeh, B'tfil Lefanai. So they said what it means is that you have to watch out for yourself, meaning pay attention to your orifices, I guess, would be the best word for that in the cave of, so that you don't have to go to the bathroom. Meaning, when you come before me, make sure that you don't have to go to the bathroom. So someone's going to the bathroom, let's take off his tefillah in 4 amot before he goes into the bathroom, and then he can go in. I was only talking about a permanent bathroom that you have to take your tefillin off for amot before you go into the permanent bathroom. However, if it's a beta kisei arai, it's like a makeshift bathroom. You're just kind of going there. Then you take off your tefillin, and then you can go to the bathroom without distancing yourself for amot. But then you have to distance yourself for amot from where you just went to the bathroom in order to put your tefillin back on, because by going to the bathroom there, you made it into a beta kisei kavua, a permanent bathroom, and so you have to be 4 amot away when you're putting your tefillin back on. So they asked, is a person allowed to go into the bathroom wearing his tefillin just to go number one, right? As opposed to going number two, maybe he can wear tefillin for number one. Ravina says it's allowed. Ravada bar matna, asur. Ravada bar matna says it's not allowed. Atu shaylu le Rava, they asked Rava, amar luhu asur. Chashinan shemi yivana ben, v'amri la shemi yafich ben. Right? Because why are you not allowed to go in even for number one? Because we're afraid that you're going to go number two. Alternatively, we're afraid that maybe you're going to flatulate in them while you're urinating. And so, for that reason, you have to take them off even for number one. Tani ida, chanich vaz avet kisei kavua, choletz vizav. We had a different brayta that says that if you're going into a permanent bathroom, you take your tefillin off 4 amot before you walk into the bathroom, and you should put it by a window next to Rashut HaRabim. And then you should go to the bathroom. And when you leave, you should distance yourself 4 amot from the bathroom and then put tefillin on. That is the sheet of Beit Shammai. Behillel says, no, you can hold the tefillin, you take off the tefillin, you hold them in your hand, and then you can go into the bathroom. Rabbi Kiva says, you can put them in your clothing and go into the bathroom. But big deal side of that, really, you just put them in clothing. Zimnan mishdali lehu v'nafli, but sometimes you forget they're there and they're gonna fall out onto the bathroom. Ela, ema, ochsin big deal v'yad v'nechnas. No, Rabbi Kiva holds that you have to wrap them up in your clothing and hold them in your hand, and then you go into the bathroom. And when you're in the bathroom, you just put them in kind of the crevices in the wall right next to the toilet. And you shouldn't put them in the crevices next to Rashut HaRabim, by the public thoroughfare. Because maybe someone passing by is going to see the tefillin, and this person who put them there is going to come to be suspect by his friends. What exactly does that mean? He's going to come to be suspect by his friends. So the Gemara is going to tell a story that happened once and what the concern that arose from it was. There was once a Talmud of the yeshiva who put his tefillin in a crevice right next to Rashut HaRabim. And a certain prostitute came and took his tefillin. And so she came to the Beit HaMidrash and showed everyone the tefillin and said, look at what so-and-so gave me as a payment for sleeping with me. So when the student heard this, he went to the top of the roof and he either fell off or he jumped off and he died. And so at that time they decreed that you should wrap up your tefillin in clothing and hold it in your hand when you go to the bathroom so that you don't come to such an event. Initially they said that you should put the tefillin in the crevices next to the toilet. But then rats would get into them and would take them. So they said, instead of putting in the crevices in the wall, put them by a window that's next to the Rishut HaRabim. And then passersby would come and take them. So they made a gzera that you just hold on to them and go into the bathroom. You're supposed to wrap them up like a sefer, kind of like we do now, with the straps, wrap them up like a sefer, and hold them in your right hand, connected libo, right next to his heart. Probably so you're already always paying attention, you don't forget that they're there. As long as you don't have one of the straps going, falling below your hand, an entire tefach. Basically, you don't have a tefach revealed strap. Right, we only taught that you're supposed to do that, like wrap them up and keep them in their right hand close to your heart if you have time left in the day once you're out of the bathroom to put them back on. Right, but if you don't have any more time afterward to put them on anyway, then you just make like a sack for them, a bag for them that's at least one tefach big, and you put them in the sack and then you can go into the bathroom. This of course is talking about a time when they would really wear tefillin went all day. As pshat, the mitzvah is, well, the mitzvah isn't a daily mitzvah necessarily. The mitzvah is just, it's a mitzvah as long as you're wearing tefillin. I think Rav Shechter was once asked by a Talmud, I felt so bad, I was so sick yesterday, I couldn't put on my tefillin. He's like, the first day I missed, so what do I do to make up for it? And he goes, well, there's no inyan of making it or missing it that day. It's just a mitzvah to be wearing tefillin. So be very, very careful and, you know, maybe wear it twice as long tomorrow. It's about the same in total mitzvah points. It's about, you know, it's about the same amount of time that you're wearing the tefillin. We don't wear it today because we're concerned that we're not, either we can't keep a goof nucky, we can't keep a clean body, we can't keep clean thoughts. So we say you have to put on tefillin because it's the mitzvah deoraita. So put it on at shachar when you can focus properly and then take them off afterward. And actually the Mishnah Brura is concerned that it looks like religious arrogance for someone who wears them all day. Although there is a minhag of the old city, minhag Yerushalmi, and specifically in the Ir Atika, a lot of people there wear tefillin all day. So perhaps because there it's again established minhag, it doesn't look like religious arrogance. Amar Yaakov Bar Acha Amar of Zera Lo Shanu Ela Sheshu Biyom Lovashan Van Ei Sheshu Biyom Lovashan Osa Nagumin Kiz. Okay, so you put them in a sack as big up with a tefach of space. Amar Rabba Bar Rachana Amar Biyochanan Biyom Golan Kamin Sefer Manichan Biyado Keneged Libo. Right, so in the daytime you wrap them up like a sefer and you hold them in your hand next to your heart. Belado Selem Kamin Kiz Tefach. So similarly said, in that night you should just put them away in a tefillin bag. Umanichan. Right, Amar Rabbi Lo Shanu Ela Beklishu Klia Aval Beklishu Ein Klia Nafil Pachod Metevach. We only thought they need a full tefach of space in a vessel that was designed for them. However, if it's not in the vessel that's designed for them, you can have even less than a tefach. What's the concern? I mean, think about those tefillin boxes, for example. Even if they're technically away, wrapped up in the box, it's still, the tefillin boxes were made for them, so it's not distinguishable that they're put away necessarily. They still look out because they were designed to hold these things. But if they weren't designed to hold the things, just like a normal bag, then it doesn't need a full tefach of space. And the tefach of space there is just to look, make it look like the tefillin were put away. Right? And now we're going to make a comment about the significance of a bag of with even less than a tefach of airspace. You might say, well, you know, what's the significance? It has less than a tefach of airspace. It's so small. Is that even like putting away the tefillin? Is there anything protecting the tefillin at that point? It's like having them out as well. That bag is so small. There's no, because even pachim ketani, even small jars that are less than a tefach inside can interrupt the tuma emanating from a dead body. As we learned earlier, tuma transmits be'ohel, right, in the airspace above the source of the dead body. However, we also learn that if there is airspace immediately after the source of the tuma, and then there is something on top of that tuma to stop it, like the seal, like the top of the coffin, for example, that stops the tuma. If there's no space in between, then it just makes tame everything that's touching it up until Shemayim. And if there's no eventual blockage between the tuma and between Shemayim, then it goes up entirely. However, if there's airspace followed by a blockage, that stops the tuma from spreading upward any further. And so we say the significance of less than even a tefach of airspace is that small vessels with less than a tefach can actually interrupt the spread of tuma. Right, so when I was going with Rabbi Yochanan to the bathroom, or when he was going to the bathroom, and I was walking behind him, he was holding even a sefer, a gadata, right? He would say, hey, hold on to this sefer for me while I go into the bathroom. But when he was wearing tefillin, he would not tell me to hold his tefillin while he was going into the bathroom. Amar hoyel v'sharon rabbanon ninnatrin. He says, since the rabbi has allowed me to do this, allowed me to go in with tefillin, I'm going to keep them on for protection, right? What is ninnatrin? So according to Rashi, that they are protecting him. He wants them on for protection. He's involved in a mitzvah, and therefore it's going to protect him, right? According to Rabbeinu Yonah, ninnatrin is, I want to be able to protect them. I don't have to ask you to guard my tefillin. I'm going to protect them, since the rabbi say I'm allowed to be wearing these anyway. Amarov ki azlinen batra, it was a similar story. Amarov, Rava said, ki have azlinen batra de Rabbi Nachon, ki have nakit safra dagarata yaivli, ki have nakit tefillin lo yaivli. Amarhoi v'sharon rabbana ninnatrin. Similarly, when Rav Nachman was going into the bathroom, he would tell me to hold his Sefer Agadata, but he wouldn't tell me to hold his tefillin. That he would hold on to by himself, because he said the Rabbanan allowed it, so I might as well carry them in here for protection. You shouldn't be holding your tefillin in your hand, or a Sefer Torah in your hand, and daven. Why? It's a distraction. You're going to be concerned that it's going to drop, and you're not going to be able to properly focus on your davening. And you shouldn't go to the bathroom with them. You shouldn't sleep in them. Not a permanent sleep, like a long sleep, or even a temporary sleep. And similarly, a knife, or money, or a plate, or a loaf, you should not hold in your hand while you're davening, because it's a distraction, because you're afraid that they might fall. Amar Rav Jeshet, late hilchata ki hamatnita. The halacha is not like that Mishnah. The Beit Shammai, right? When Beit Shammai, this Mishnah that says you're not allowed to go into the bathroom, even, you know, for number one, with your tefillin on, that the halacha is not like that Mishnah, because it's clearly in accordance with the shita of Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel, hashta Beit Akisa kevushar, Beit Akisa arayb mibay. I know for a fact it can't be Beit Hillel's shita, because if it was Beit Hillel's shita, he allows me to go into a permanent bathroom, a makeshift bathroom. He's not going to let me go into it. No, it must be the shita of Beit Shammai. So that Mishnah, we don't pass and like it may be devarim sheitarti lecha kan, asarti lecha kan. But wait 1 second. We taught about a braita pertaining to permanent bathrooms and makeshift bathrooms, that things that were permitted in one are usher in the other. Meaning that it's a chiddush. Things that there's something that even though it doesn't seem logical to us, is usher in a makeshift bathroom, but permitted in a temporary bathroom, which is counterintuitive. My love, tefillin, is that not talking about taking off your tefillin? Meaning, if taking off your tefillin, which Beit Hillel said was mutter to keep your tefillin on going into a permanent bathroom, so if I said that it was usher to keep your tefillin on going into a temporary bathroom, then I would understand, then I would have a practical case that meets the standard of that which we taught about a braita on temporary bathrooms and permanent bathrooms, that there is a counterintuitive case where something is usher in a temporary bathroom that's mutter in a permanent bathroom. So don't be so sure to tell me this can't be Beit Hillel Shita, because obviously if he lets you go into a bathroom with tefillin in a permanent bathroom, then he would let you into a temporary bathroom, because we did teach that there is something that we allow in a permanent bathroom that we don't allow in a temporary bathroom. So this could actually be Beit Hillel Shita. Iyamar Bishlam Beit Hillel Itar Lecha Kan Kavua Asar Lechad Kan Beit Akisa Arai. Right. So if you hold it Hillel Shita, then it actually works out perfectly, because now we know something that is usher in a temporary bathroom that's mutter in a permanent bathroom. Iyamar Beit Shammai Halu Sharu Vlo Midi. But Beit Shammai doesn't allow it in any case. So that which we taught about something being mutter in a permanent bathroom but usher in a temporary bathroom couldn't be Beit Shammai, because he doesn't allow for any case. Kitanya Hila Inyan Tevach Tvachaim. No. What did we say is mutter in a permanent bathroom, but also in a temporary bathroom? That is the matter of tefach tefachaim. The case of tefach tefachaim, one hand breadth or two hand breadths, is how much bare skin you're allowed to reveal of yourself when you go to the bathroom. Especially, specifically, I think they went to the bathroom in quasi-public places. But for the purposes of tsniut, they would limit how much bare skin they would reveal when they went to the bathroom. And so essentially, the rule was, if you're going number two, you're allowed to reveal one tefach behind yourself. And if you're going number one, you're allowed to reveal two tefachim in front of yourself. And so what we're going to suggest is that when you're going number two in a permanent bathroom, you're allowed to reveal one tefach behind yourself and no tefachim in front of yourself. But when you're going into, no, I said that wrong. When you're going into a temporary bathroom for number two, right, you're not allowed to reveal any bare skin in front of yourself, but you're allowed to reveal a tefach of bare skin behind yourself. Whereas if you go into a permanent bathroom and you're going number one, you're allowed to reveal two tefachim of bare skin in front of yourself. So because we're not only taking the variable of a permanent bathroom and a temporary bathroom here, we're also taking the variable of number one and number two, and for number two, you're not allowed to reveal reveal anything in front, and for number one, you're allowed to reveal two tefachim in front, if we say that you're going number one in a permanent bathroom, and number two in a temporary bathroom, then you're allowed to reveal more skin in front of yourself in a permanent bathroom than you would be in a temporary bathroom. And that's what we meant when we said that there's something that's usher in a temporary bathroom that's mutter in a permanent bathroom. The Tani, as we taught in the Mishnah, Chara, the Tani Chara, as one Tana taught, Kshu Nifne Megala Acharav Tefach Ulefanav Tvachaim. Right? That when you're going to the bathroom, you're allowed to reveal behind yourself one Tefach, or in front of yourself two Tvachim. Tarva Tanya Idach, and another Brita taught, Lacharav Tefach Ulefanav Lav Klum. And the other one taught that behind you, you're allowed to reveal one tevach, and in front of you, can't reveal anything. So again, we're talking about going to the bathroom, and one braita told me that you're allowed to reveal a tevach behind you and two tevachim in front of you, and the other braita taught me that you're allowed to reveal a tevach behind you and two tevachim in front of you, and not at all, nothing in front of you, right? So that seemingly contradictory braitot, one that allows for the revealing of two tvachim in front of you, one that doesn't allow for the revealing of any tvachim in front of you. So how do we resolve that? My love, so weren't we teaching this case where we're talking about a man going to the bathroom, and one of them where he's allowed to reveal two tvachim in front of him, that's talking about when he's going number one. When he's not allowed to reveal anything, that's talking about when he's in front of him, that's talking about when he's going number two. And therefore we have a case where something will be usher in a temporary bathroom, but mutter in a permanent bathroom. But Tizbra, is this really logical to suggest that's what we're talking about? Ibiktanim lacharav tefach lamali. If he's going number one, why does he need even a tefach behind him? He's going number one, and so he needs to reveal a tefach behind him? That doesn't make any sense. Elyid ibiktolim. No, rather, this is both talking about going number two. Velokashin, it's still not difficult. Habi isha. Right? And that which is taught is not difficult because one is taught about a man. When you're allowed to reveal two tefachim in front of you, that's talking about a man because we're concerned that when you go number two, because you're pushing, you're going to have to urinate as well. And so a man needs to reveal two tefachim in order to urinate. A woman doesn't have to. Iachi, but if that's the case, harikatani. And by the way, that also, Derech Agav gives us an answer to something that's usher in a temporary bathroom that's mutter in a permanent bathroom, right? Because it's usher for a woman in a temporary bathroom to reveal two tefachim in front of her when she's going number two, but it would be mutter for a man to reveal two tefachim in front of him when he's going number two in a permanent bathroom. So just the variable is man, woman. But wait one second. In that braita, where we taught that there is something that's mutter to do in a permanent bathroom, that's also to do in a temporary bathroom, we said that this is a kal v'chomer that has no tshuva. Meaning, this is something that seems clearly illogical in terms of the kal v'chomer, because logically, you would suggest that it's much that anything that's usher in a temporary bathroom should call the chomer be usher in a permanent bathroom. And so what did we teach? Yeah, in Achinami, even though it doesn't seem logical because you should make a kal v'chomer and suggest the opposite, you can't make the kal v'chomer here. The halacha is not in accordance with the logic of this kal v'chomer, right? But how could you say that the logic doesn't check out and nonetheless it's the halacha? The logic checks out perfectly. We have an additional variable, the variable between man and woman who go to the bathroom in different ways. It's perfectly logical. So what are you telling me here that, oh, don't ask about the kal v'chomer. How is this logical? Because in Achinami it's not logical, but we don't follow the normal stipulations of kal v'chomer here. A very logical answer. When men and women go to the bathroom differently, there's no issue whatsoever. Ela lav tefillin. Rather, no, we're talking about tefillin, and that was the distinction we made. The initial distinction we made was correct. V'tuvta the Rava. This is difficulty for Rava. Amar Rav Sheshet tuvta. Wait, is that really a difficulty? Because either way, you have this problem. Meaning, at the end of the day, I'm still going to ask you a question. How is it that you made something usher in a beta kise arai, in a temporary beta kise? You said it was prohibited, and yet you permitted it in a permanent beta kise. Are we just going to like ignore that? We're just going to say, oh, and even though it's clearly a kal v'chomer that would suggest the opposite, we don't care. We're going to pass him like that. That doesn't make any sense. How do we address that problem at the end of the day? There's a clear kal v'chomer here. That's how we establish the halacha. You can't just say, I know there's a kal v'chomer that would teach you the opposite, but yeah, don't use that kal v'chomer. No, I'm not okay with that answer. Hachikama. Rather, no. That's not what the Braita said. This is what the Braita said. Betakisa kavua de lekanitzotot shari. Betakisa arai de ikanitzotot asri. Rather, this is the case, right? When it's a betakisa kavua, right? It's a set bathroom, right? So because it's a set bathroom, it's a place to sit. And therefore, there's not going to be scattering of urine around you, and your clothes aren't going to get dirty, and that's why it's permitted. But in a temporary bathroom, there's nowhere to sit down, you're going to be standing up, and there's a concern that there's going to be splattering around you, your clothes are going to get dirty, and while you're cleaning them, you're going to dirty your tefillin. Right? And that's why it's usher. Yachi, am I in love tshuva? Tshuva malaitahi. One second. You're telling me that this is an illogical conclusion, and yet we're going to say that's the halacha anyway? I have a wonderful reason why that's the tshuva, because it's perfectly logical. Meaning, oh sure, it's not a kal v'chomer, but I mean, that's perfectly logical, because, okay, beta kisei kavua and a beta kisei arai are different in that there's a place to sit in one and not a place to sit in the other, and so where having a place to sit would make an impact on how you use the bathroom, then yeah, it makes sense that it would be usher in a beta kisei arai and mutter in a beta kisei kavua. No, this is how you should read the braita. Hamilta teiti la b'torah tama velo teiti la b'kal v'chomer. Right? Rather, not that there's no tshuva for this kal v'chomer. Not like, yeah, obviously there's a kal v'chomer that we were not making here, and that's the halacha anyway. No, it's not what we meant to say. Rather, don't look at this teaching in accordance with the normal means of learning halacha, where you would look to make a kal v'chomer, where you would say, if Beit HaKisei Arai is usher, then kal v'chomer, Beit HaKisei Kavua. No. Don't apply that kal v'chomer here. Why? Rather, apply svara here. Just look at each case individually and say, is there a reason in this case, independent of its comparison to the other Beit HaKisei? Is there a reason in this case to make it usher? Well, yes, there is a reason. There's going to be a splattering of urine. Okay, and in this case, is there a reason to make it usher? No, you're sitting down. There's no reason. So we're not saying that the kal v'chomer, that because of a kal v'chomer, this din shouldn't make sense, but that's the halacha anyway. What we're saying is, don't apply a kal v'chomer here. It's not relevant to apply a kal v'chomer here because there's another reason why something would be usher and something would be mutter. Because if you want to say it's a kal v'chomer, then you don't have a way to answer how illogical it is that one is usher and the other is mutter. But if you say that each one is a svara b'fnei atzmam, then it works perfectly because there's a perfect svara for why the Beit HaKisei Kavua would be mutter here. Tanu Rabbanan rotzei lekanes sura keva ma'alei chasar pa'amim dalet amud o dalet pa'amim yud amud v'yifne v'char kach nichnas. Someone wants to go into a sura and doesn't want to get up in the middle to go to the bathroom. He's concerned. He doesn't want to interrupt himself in the middle to go to the bathroom. So he should walk around because that may cause him to go to the bathroom faster. Nice little advice. Amar v'yitzchak nichnas surat kavua keva chol tzfilev v'char kach nichnas. Someone who's going to a set meal should take off his tefillin first because there's a lot of kalut rosh joking going around in the table. It's not appropriate to be wearing your tefillin at the time. So Rabbi Chiya arguing, he says, no, actually, you take them off in the room and you put them down on the table. And then you put them right on afterward, right after the meal. So how long are you supposed to keep them off for? Until you say the bracha. So one right that taught me you can wrap up your tefillin in a head covering and together with your money. And one says, no, you shouldn't wrap up your tefillin in a head covering together with your money. Lo kasha. And these two brachas are not difficult. They don't actually contradict each other. Hadazamne hadalazamne. That's when one is when you set that wrapping for your tefillin specifically, and because it's tashmish kedusha, it shouldn't be used for money. And the other one is when you didn't set that wrapping specifically. Damar of chizda, hai suda de tefillin, dazamne, lemetzar be tefillin, tsar be tefillin, asa lemetzar be, right? This scarf that you designated for tefillin, once you've put your tefillin in it, you're not allowed to put money in it anymore. Notice that even though you designated it, you still have to use it for tefillin. Just designating it is not enough if you've never used it. Pshiti, azamne velo tzarbe, tzarbe velo azamne. Shari. But if you designated and didn't yet wrap it up, or you wrapped it up but you never designated it for tefillin, you're allowed to put your money in it. You're allowed to put your money in it. And according to Abaye, who believes that just designated something is already significant, even if you don't use it for that purpose. Azamne avagav de lotzarbe. So even if you designated it and you did not yet wrap your tefillin in it, it's still already usher to put your money in it. Tzarbe, and if you did put your tefillin in it, iazamne asir, ilo azamne lo asir. And if you did wrap your tefillin up in it, so if you designated it for tefillin and you wrapped it up in it, then that's fine. But if you never designated it for tefillin, even if it's already wrapped up in it, then you're still allowed to put your money in it.